Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
A lot of people I know think of Jehovah's Witnesses as nothing more than the religion.
Wrong button. Hi, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for joining me, folks out there. I mean, this is your time. You don't have to. You can spend it any way you want to, but I'm gratified that you have decided to spend it with me. Once again, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio, everywhere. Sound like I'm reading that, doesn't it? But I'm not. It's coming right off the top of my head, actually. I guess when you say it so many times, you know, people start to realize that he means it. When you say something so many times, it kind of stick with you. You know what I'm saying? All righty. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show once again. And I'm proud to be here, folks. I'm proud to be with you. I'm proud that you're with me. And there's plenty in the news and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm so sick of covering Donald Trump and the politicians in Washington. I'm just sick and tired of it. This show is not for that. I mean, we talk about a lot of things on the show and, you know, we try to mix it up and everything. But, you know, Donald Trump is just, like I said on yesterday's show, Donald Trump is the elephant in the room. And you have to, whether he's doing good or doing bad or whatever, you know, he's always controversial and he will remain controversial if he winds up, if he can do 4 years. A lot of people are speculating if he can do 4 years. Some people say maybe he'll be lucky if he get through 6 months. There's no doubt about it, folks. Donald Trump has already made enemies of the world. I mean, he's out there. I mean, he is totally out there. And, it's a shame that we are, as the United States, we're no longer in the top 10. I think we're in the bottom 50 somewhere, you know, because of Trump. I mean, he has pissed a lot of leaders off. He has pissed the world off, and he doesn't care. He does not care. Oh, and he's still talking. Oh, yeah, there's violence in the city of Chicago. There's more shootings and all that kind of thing. in Chicago, and it's almost embarrassing to say you're from the city of Chicago, but I do love it here. You know, so we're going to stay. We're not going to get up and run. We're going to fight this. We're going to fight the violence. We're going to do all of that. We're not going to get up and run and like cowards and leave our city. And we're just going to stay here and knuckle down and just fight for our city, to take our city back from the thugs, the gangbangers, you know, the sex traffickers and all that kind of thing. But anyway, Chicago is in the national news once again. Once again. I mean, the killings for January 16 is higher now than the shootings for January 2016. And the police department in Chicago were saying a couple of weeks ago, that they were going to do better in solving crime and stuff. But it doesn't seem like it. I mean, it doesn't appear that they're nowhere near being better. I mean, we're all over the national news. We're all over the internet. We're all over the world saying that Chicago is the most violent city in America, maybe even the world. I don't know. But, you know, and the politicians are, if you've been listening to the show, you know, I've been talking about the National Guard, the U.S. Army, or anything to help to bring down and quell the violence on the south and west sides of the city. However, the mayor and the police superintendent, I'm pretty sure the governor, they do not want that. They do not want the National Guard. They do not want, they want federal help, but they want it in the terms of money, not in the terms of putting people actually on the ground to stop these, to stop some of this violence. They don't want it. They don't want, I mean, they've said it. I mean, it's all over everywhere. They don't want it. I mean, why? Why? Why don't you want help in trying to, this type of help as National Guard and as the United States Army? They're out there. Why? I mean, when you got people dying and shootings all over the place, crime is all over the place, and these bad guys are still out there, the police can't seem to catch them. They're still out there wreaking mayhem all over the place. People can't walk out the doors. They can't go to the park. And these guys are turning down the National Guard. Some a group of people who could probably help and maybe stop it, or just about eliminate the carnage in these communities. Why would you turn down help? Why would you say there's a certain type of help you would not take? When you're in a crisis like the city of Chicago, where, you know, it's up for grabs, it's season out on the streets. I mean, there's shooting out on the street like the old West or something, and you're turning down help. Kids are dying. People are dying. Parents are dying. You know, hospitals are being overwhelmed with shooting victims every single night, and you turning down help? I would say send the National Guard. They're also turning down, I'm pretty sure, they're turning down putting cops in some of these high crime areas, having a 24/7 presence in some of these communities. They're probably turning that down too. You know, I think the Fed should come in. This is my opinion on it. I think the Fed should come in and take this from the Chicago police, take this out of the hands of the mayor. Instead of working together with these guys, the feds should probably just work alone in solving these crimes in the city of Chicago, because we can see right now that these people don't want to do that. They're looking for federal money. And at this juncture, Donald Trump is talking about building a wall. If this goes through and if this happened, he's going to need every cent to build a wall. He's not going to send any money, but he's going to send that money towards building a wall. Why would you turn down help from the National Guard and have these flim-flammy ass reasons for doing it? They're there. This is what they're for. Violence. These people, these gangbangers and thugs, They have guns. They have high-powered weapons. They have AK-47s. They have assault machine guns, assault weapons. They drive by and they shoot. You can't seem to do anything about it. You don't have any plans, no solutions. You have nothing. Why are you turning down the National Guard in the city of Chicago in these South and West Side neighborhoods? It doesn't make sense. And then all you want to do is, you can't throw money at the problem. Oh, well, we need better schools. We need jobs. We need better education. We need hope in our communities. What you need in your communities, especially if they're taken over by thugs, you need an incredible force, an incredible show of force. Of course, if you put the National Guard or the U.S. Army in some of these areas, there well may be a bloodbath, but the Army and the National Guard, they're going to come out the winners. Because if these thugs, these murderers, these crooks, if they're dumb enough to shoot at the National Guard or the Army, the National Guard is going to shoot back. And with all the carnage on Chicago streets, Mary Emanuel and his superintendent, they should welcome the National Guard. They should welcome any kind of help. This is their city. I don't see why Barack Obama isn't saying something. Even though he's out of office, this is supposed to be his hometown, but he's saying nothing. He's quiet on this whole thing, and I don't understand why. And I'm going to be, on the radio every day after, especially starting next week. And like I'm always, actually, like I'm always touting these people turning down help. They're saying, well, we're not turning down help. We want to work with them. We want to partner with them. I'd say no, do not. If the feds come into Chicago to quell some of this crime, I don't think the Chicago forces should work with them. I think the only way that the Chicago should work with the feds, if they come to Chicago to help solve some of these murders, is to provide them with intel. That's it. Information, records, and that's it. Records, and maybe in some cases, tell the feds where these gangbangers and thugs are located, because the Chicago police know. They know the bad neighborhoods. They know the thug neighborhoods. They know the neighborhoods where the bad guys are, and they know where the guns are. I think the feds should lead this investigation into Chicago's crime in these neighborhoods. I think the feds should take leadership because the mayor and his police department, they aren't doing it. They can't do it. They don't know what the fuck to do. Sorry about my French, folks. But sometimes when you get a little bit passionate about what you're talking about, words like that come out. All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Author Irene Winberg is scheduled. We'll see how that works. But anyway, it's just not right for them to turn down the National Guard. There are some people on the west sides and the south sides of the city who will welcome the National Guard. They said any kind of help is help because they know they're not getting any help from the local police department. They know that. Some of these guys are hesitant to do their jobs. They're hesitant to pull out their guns on a bad guy. They're hesitant to tase. They're hesitant to stop people who should be stopped and searched and probably thrown in jail. We need federal help. We need all the help we can get. And not just by money. You can't just keep throwing money at the problem. I think the Obama administration gave about $1 million or something to Chicago to fight crime. And yet the carnage goes up and up and up and up and up. You can't throw money at it. Well, they need education. They need jobs. They need the criminal, the thug doesn't want a damn job. The criminal, the thug, the bad guy doesn't want to work. They don't want an education. They don't give a damn about an education. They want to get out here and shoot people and kill people. This is what they want to do. They want to go around snatching up young girls and, you know, putting them out on the street. They want to sex traffic. They don't want jobs, Mr. Mayor. They don't want an education, Mr. Eddie Johnson. They don't want these things. They want to kill, maim, and go around shooting people. This is what they do. There's a few people on the, there are some people on the north and west sides, not west side, south and west sides of the city, who may be actually want an education, want a job. That's okay. That's fine. But the criminals do not. I can see them talking about getting the kids who are growing up, making sure. But the way you get the kids that are growing up is to give them a safe and decent place to live. Show them that you're getting the bad guys out of their communities, and you're stopping and preventing a lot of these shootings in these areas. A lot of places that these shootings go on, there is no police presence whatsoever. There is the only time you see police presence is after, if I can say it, somebody is shot. Then police, they're all over the fucking place. But before that, you see none. There's no presence. There's nothing. No patrolling. There's nothing. And the bad guys know this. And the bad guys also know that the police are hindered in what they can do out on the street, because we just had a federal investigation of Chicago police, and it took a year. The crooks know that the Chicago police are hindered in what they can do. They know that the Chicago police are wearing body cameras. They know that the Chicago police are, you know, will get in trouble in certain times, in certain ways, if they don't comply to certain aspects of their department, if I said that properly. Anyway, it's the criminals are smarter than they ever have been before. They're more sophisticated. They are smarter. They know what the police officers are going to do before the police officers do it. They know when the police come. They know when the police go. They're not stupid. They're not dumb. This is why they get away with what they get away with. And they know when the police is not going to be at a certain place. So if there's an area on the south and west sides of the city and people are out partying or just gathering or just hanging out, you know, and the police aren't present, that's a recipe for a drive-by shooting. Because if the police were present and patrolling and stationary in some of these high crime areas, we would not have the carnage that we have. If the Chicago police officers and the mayor find out what other states are doing, other states and cities are doing to keep their crime down and copy that, we would not have the carnage that we have. I agree with Donald Trump, and I don't agree with him much, but about Chicago, I do. It is just a bloodbath here. And all you get from the mayor and the superintendent is a bunch of lip, a bunch of talk, a lot of talk. No action. They have no plans. They have no solutions, but yet they can turn down the National Guard. The National Guard would be here to help, to stop the carnage. What is so wrong with that? And it by them turning the National Guard down, turning the National Guard away, which we don't even know is going to come, you know, because Donald Trump said he was going to send in federal help. He didn't specify what kind of help. So we don't really know what's going to transpire. But anyway, if the National Guard would come, they should be working with the National Guard, not pushing them away. They are here. They would be here to help stop the shootings, to prevent more carnage, to prevent more deaths. Children can even sit in their own homes, sleep in their own beds without getting shot. a shot coming through the window or through the door of their home. This is ridiculous. And we got a mayor who is turning down help before he even knows what kind of help will be sent. This is crazy. You tell that to a person, you tell that to a mom who have had all four of her kids gunned down through gun violence in their neighborhoods. She's going to say, I welcome the National Guard. I want the National Guard. They shoot here every day, every night. We hear shots all the time in our neighborhood, gangbanging, thugging, sex trafficking. They will welcome the National Guard. Turning down the National Guard is stupid. Totally, totally stupid. And I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's the mayor, the city council, Johnson, the Chicago superintendent, police superintendent. It's just crazy. Well, then if you're not going to accept the National Guard, then what are you going to do to stop the shootings, the killings, the murders, the crime in the city of Chicago? The other day, someone was just robbed up on the train, on the CTA train. And I agree. I think it should be. Years ago, they had the CTA police on these trains. They took them away, I guess, because of budgetary problems. It was cutting the budget or something. So this is crazy. And people are demanding that. I totally agree. I think there should be CTA police on some of these subway trains. They should be patrolling these planes on these trains, because the thugs get on the trains almost every day, every night, and start robbing people and hurting people. Chicago police is just not up to par to doing their jobs when it comes to the criminal, stopping the criminal in their tracks. They can collect all the guns they want, make all the raids they want, but that's not even making a dent in what's really is out here. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We are talking about Chicago crime. And I'm going to keep talking about Chicago crime until I die, until they solve it. It's just crazy. Like I said before at the beginning of the show, I'm not going to get up and run. A lot of people are leaving Chicago. They're leaving the state of Illinois because of the crime, because of the high taxes, because there's no budget. There's plenty of reasons to not stay in Chicago. But I'm going to stay because I'm going to help fight, make my city a livable city, which it is already. It's already a livable city, but we want to make it better. But we cannot make it better with these assholes that we have now in office who are turning down help while people are being slaughtered on the fucking streets, and they're turning down help. Rahm Emanuel will not be elected again. There is no doubt about it, because people are up in arms about him anyway. One of the things that's going to bring him down is what I have just been talking about, the crime in the city of Chicago. It's spiraling out of control. Last year we had 764 killings in Chicago, deaths, homicides, okay? 764, I believe, if my figures and my numbers are right. On top of that, we've had 4,331 shootings in the city. And now we're on the mark to surpass that in 2017. What does that tell you? I agree with Donald Trump. What the hell is wrong with Chicago? What's going on in Chicago? I didn't vote for him, but I agree with that. What the hell is going on in Chicago? I'll tell you what's going on in Chicago. The police are not up to par for doing their jobs. I mean, they can pivot all they want to. They can spin it all they want to. But the bottom line, people are dying like dropping dead, like flies from bullets. Shootings all over the place. Innocent people dying. You can't even go to a damn funeral. You're going to get killed at a funeral. It's crazy. You're going to get shot dead at a funeral. This is what happened a few days ago. Some people are at a funeral for a young man who was shot. They was at his funeral grieving. And then somebody came back. So I think there was a drive-by and somebody shot up the funeral. It's crazy. Five people were shot. From what I know, five people were sent to the hospital. And I don't know if anybody died yet. It's still an ongoing investigation from what I'm told. Getting back, folks, to turn down help is just, I don't know. It's just crazy. I've heard this on television today. I heard it yesterday. I said, why are they turning down the National Guard? Why are they turning down free help that's going to cost Chicago nothing? Why? It's no skin off their nose. It's nothing coming out of their pockets. Why turn down federal help such as the National Guard? It doesn't make sense when the police themselves are not up to standards or up to it when it comes to stopping the carnage and the murdering and killing in the city of Chicago. I welcome the National Guard, but you got some politicians out there to say, no, 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 not the National Guard. Wow. These politicians should be voted out on their asses. You know, I mean, they're doing nothing for the city of Chicago. I think one of the criteria for a politician in the city of Chicago is to protect the people, protect its voters. And it's not happening. It's not happening. Chicago is the third largest city in America. It's quickly becoming the fourth largest city in America because people are leaving. People are leaving the state. People are leaving this city. People are, they're pissed off. They're angry at the crime. They're pissed off at the high taxes. They're pissed off that there's no budget in place yet for the city of Chicago. And it's a damn shame. But I'm going to stay. I'm not going to leave because I'm going to fight the good fight. OK, I am going to fight the good fight. I'm here on the radio, internet radio, and I'm telling people all around the world, if you're listening, and I hope you are, and in some cases, I know you are because I can see you on my screen here. Will you tell this man that we have in Chicago, who's the mayor, not to turn down the National Guard, not to turn down any help? And we don't know if it's the National Guard or not. We don't know that. It has yet to be stated what he means by federal aid, federal help. We don't need money. Money is not going to solve the problem of crime in the city of Chicago. It is not going to solve the problem. We need as they used to say, we need boots on the ground, right? All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Sorry for my rant, folks. It just says sometimes I get a little bit passionate, you know, and about things. And because sometimes, you know, you've got these asshole politicians and they're not listening anyway because they're in their own minds. They think that they're always right and we're wrong, right? Because they're politicians and we're just ordinary people. And they're leaders and we're just speculators or whatever. All righty. We have a phone call. Let's go to the phones right quick. Well, should we do a commercial? Let's go to the phones. Let's see what we got. All right. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hey, George. This is Irene Weinberg. I'm here for my interview. And I'm enjoying your rant.
Yeah, it's a rant. I know
I enjoyed
that.
It, actually. You know. I agree with you.
All righty. Irene Weinberg. Is that Weinberg?
Weinberg. Yes, that's me.
Yeah, okay. Author Irene Weinberg on the George Wilder Jr.
Weinberg,
Show. Thanks for coming.
W.
Weinberg.
You're welcome. With a W.
Okay,
W-E-I-N-B-R-G.
Okay. Yeah, I got you on my screen here. So, yeah, I know you are coming on the show. I know I had invited you. So now that you're here, give us a little bio and tell us a little something about yourself and what you've been doing.
Okay. Well, I'm here because I wrote a book called They Serve Bagels in Heaven. And the subtitle is One Couple's Story of Love, Eternity, and the Cosmic Importance of Everyday Life. And I'm going to start our conversation by telling you that I used to think that all talk of the afterlife and afterlife experiences was complete BS. I did not believe in it. My husband and I used to laugh about it all the time. And boy, oh boy, did I get a surprise. We were married about 17 years, and I was in my kitchen washing some dishes at my kitchen sink, and my husband was watching a Jets game on TV in our family room when a very strong message suddenly came into my mind. It said, Saul has to go. Many lessons will be learned from his death. I looked around me and I thought, what the heck am I hearing? This is crazy. I took a glass of water, I brought it to him, I kissed the top of his head, and I pushed it completely out of my head. I was like, this is silly, I never said a word about it to anyone. And 2 months later, we were on the New York State Thruway. I'm calling, you can tell from my accent, I'm a New Jersey girl. We were on the New York State Thruway. We were coming home from a weekend skiing, and I suddenly felt the car go into a huge swerve. And as it did, I looked over at my husband, and he was sound asleep at the wheel. I called out to him. Yeah, I have quite a story, George. I, honest to God, I tell people I'm more surprised at what happened to me than anyone else, because I didn't believe in this at all. I called out to him, and he woke up, and he calmly went to pull the car out of the swerve, and instead we started to flip up in the air. And at that moment, I got a second strong message in my head, and it said, he's not going to make it. You are. We continued to flip over and over and over, three more times. When we stopped, we had slid into a ravine, and we were upside down. I looked over at Saul, and I said, Saulie, are you okay? George, his entire personality had left his body, and I was looking at the shell of my husband. And I knew in that moment that that second message I had received was sadly right on. Now I feel the car being turned over, and the strong hands of an EMT began to reach through the window of my car, which was a total wreck. As I began sliding through my shattered window, an unemotional, authoritative male voice came into my head and boomed, be loving and kind to everyone, as they laid me on the side of the road. Well, I don't know about you, but this would tend to change your cells as they're multiplying. I mean, my goodness. So there I am.
Yeah.
I mean, my God. I know my husband is dead next to me. A helicopter is hovering nearby to take me to an emergency trauma center. They're tying a tourniquet around my leg to stop me from bleeding to death from a torn artery in the bottom of my foot. My eye had hemorrhaged. My collarbone was reversed inside my shoulder. I lost a ligament in my knee. And I've just been told to be loving and kind to everyone. Mm-hmm. So now what? So I spent 3 days in the hospital. And I was really aware of being loving and kind to everyone, to the emergency caregivers, to estranged family members who came to visit. I mean, I've been given this directive in my head. And I knew something was up, but I didn't know what it was. And of course, even though I felt strangely calm from the three messages, I soon went into grieving hell. And, you know, I'm dealing with family issues, and I'm dealing with, you know, financial things and all of that. And about 6 weeks after the accident, I got a call from my dry cleaner, a man named Joel, who said to me, you know, you seem very open-minded, and I want to tell you something. And I said, what is it, Joel? And he said, well, 8 years ago, my wife and I lost our son to a drug overdose, and we went to see psychologists and social workers and grief counselors, and no one could help us. And then someone told us that we all have souls, and we go cross over to the other side. He said, and I'm going to be seeing this guy. He's hosting an event. He's a very talented medium, and he's young, and he's just starting out, and I'm going to be seeing him in 2 weeks. Would you like to come as my guest? Well, I had nothing to lose. I still wasn't sure I believed in this, but I had gotten those messages. So I said, sure, why not? And I went to this guy's home in a completely different town than where I lived. I left my car. I had just stopped using my wheelchair. I left my car at his home, and I got into his car with his wife. And they drove me to this hotel in this completely different town. And I walked into this room, and this young man looked at me, and he said, I don't even want to know your name. I don't even want to know why you're here. And I walked into this room with about 35 people. They had it split. There are people who are called the sitters. I didn't know this, but I would be a sitter because I had lost a loved one. And then there were people they had brought with them before the days of voice recorders and all, who were writing notes, because when your deceased loved one starts coming through, you forget your name, let alone that, you know, that the information that's coming through to you. And I'm sitting with my dry cleaner, and I'm listening to these amazing facts that could not be fabricated out of this guy's mind coming through. And people are crying, and they're responding to it and saying, oh, my God, that's my father, that's my wife, whatever. And all of a sudden, he says, I'm getting a message from a guy, and he's saying something about Dr. Pepper. And I elbowed my dry cleaner, and I said, oh, my God, Joel, start writing. 15 years before he met me, Saul's brother, who was a big advertising executive in New York City, had written Saul's name into an advertising commercial for Dr. Pepper. And Saul used to laugh about it all the time, right? Wow. I mean, the guy, he didn't write the name George Wilder into the ad. He said the ad said, Dr. Pepper is coming east from California in boats and planes and trains, and here's the man on the street, Saul Weinberg, and let's see what he thinks about Dr. Pepper. I mean, everybody used to laugh about how Irv had inserted his brother's name in that ad. Now, how could this man know about that? Then he told me, Saul came through for 35 minutes. He said he's holding up two fingers on one hand and one finger on another. Well, we raised his two children and my one son. He's telling me about a joke that only the two of you shared. I mean, this was enough to put anyone's skepticism on the side. How does he know? He says he's holding up a can of tomato juice. And it's just something he knew about. And it's true, because when my son was very, very little, Saul used to like to joke that Matt was so skinny that if you poured tomato juice in him, he'd look just like a thermometer. How could this guy know that? He's telling me you're driving his favorite. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question.
Yeah, go. Ask me anything.
Okay, you said that something came to you while you were driving with your husband in his car, and you hearing these things in your head saying that you should always be a little bit more kind and loving.
Loving and kind to everyone was the exact quote. Loving and kind to everyone.
Okay, you seem like you've been loving and kind before that even occurred, if it occurred. Seem like you've been loving and kind all your life, or was this just an epiphany or something?
Well, let's put it this way. I had been loving and kind, but I wasn't conscious that there was more to our lives And that there was that, and that there was a directive. And the other thing I didn't know that I tell people now, because the book, mm-hmm. I got information. I channeled my book, and that's a whole other part of the story. I channeled my husband for the book. He actually came through somebody, and I asked mm-hmm. him questions about what it was like for him on the other side. What's heaven like? What does heaven do about evil? What happens? Is there really such a thing as soulmates? Do we each come here with a soul purpose? Do we really mm-hmm. live other lives? Blah, blah, blah. I asked him all these questions. And one of the things I got very clearly was that I did not know, George, what, and I did not practice, was that not only are you supposed to be loving and kind to others, but you're also supposed to be loving and kind to yourself.
Yeah.
That you're as important yeah. and precious as anyone else in this world. Yeah. So suddenly, I'm now becoming so conscious of how I'm affecting people and what I'm doing and all. And I start getting involved in the spiritual world. And I started working, you know, not only did I work with an amazing woman, I could go on and on about how I knew it was Saul coming through, but it was absolutely him. I mean, through this woman, he described the outfit he wore the night he died, the first meal I ever made him. I even got descriptions of personal traits on his body. I mean, it was unbelievable. And then there was something else that happened that blew me away. And all of this is coming through. He's giving me all this information. He's telling me that I'm supposed to write a book and that it's going to help a lot of people to not be so afraid of death and to be more conscious about how they live their lives. And I had these amazing experiences, George. Once this happened, I started coming out. And by the way, they do serve bagels in heaven. And if people would like to read the book, that information is on page 8. But as I was coming out with the story and sharing the book, so many people said that gave them a totally different perspective on life, and it was such a comfort to
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like unbelievable. And I'm not. I didn't believe in this stuff, so I'm not BSing. You know. I mean, like I went. You know,
so
this happened to
me. If you didn't believe in it, do you expect other people to believe in it just like you believe in it now after they read your book, or you're just sharing what you have experienced?
I am not trying to change anyone's religion. I'm not mm-hmm. trying to change anyone's belief system, but I am seeding the possibility that there is more to life than what meets your eye, and that there is a great, like you're talking about the violence and everything. So what? There's a lot of lessons to be learned. There's a lot of things that goes on a spiritual plane for the betterment mm-hmm. of the planet that we is not apparent to our naked eyes. I'm going to tell you, for instance, one story. I was working with this medium, and now all of a sudden I'm into this and I'm meeting these people. And I went with this medium to Vermont. I knew nobody there. Someone had invited us to come to Vermont because there are grieving people, George, everywhere who would love to turn their skepticism into belief, like what happened to me, and
yeah.
actually communicate
yeah.
with their deceased loved ones, their children, all of that. And I've witnessed all of that.
You know what?
And
I would
room,
like to do that.
I could get you
I would
touch
love
with
to
touch
be...
some amazing people. Because a lot of people come to me now because I know the real deal, and I know the ones who are phonies.
Yeah.
And I just want to tell tell your listeners this one amazing story. I walk into this
okay.
room. I've never seen anyone there in my life. And this woman was holding what they call a gallery, which is, again, a bunch of people who are all together. I mean, people get privates, but in this case, it's a little cheaper. You're sitting with a group, and you're hoping that your loved one comes through with messages to you, like happened to me. So we walk in, and we saw a young girl who must have been 23 or 24 years old in Burlington, Vermont, crying her eyes out because the night before he unexpectedly died, she and her father had a miserable, horrible fight, and they called each other terrible names. And there she is. He suddenly dies, and there she is, hysterical.
Wow.
And someone said to her, well, you know, who knows? Maybe there's something to this. Maybe you should come. The first thing that happened, we walk in the room, we don't know anything. We just see this girl crying. Immediately, her father came through. And immediately, he told the story about how they had this horrible fight. She was crying, and that they called each other these terrible names. And that he said, honey, it doesn't mean anything over here. And he apologized to her. She apologized to him. She got so much peace and closure that night. And it taught me to be, and this is one of the things that I hope people will realize from reading the book, or at least become, start to think about from reading the book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It taught me to be mindful of what I say to others, even when I'm upset with them, because I never know if that's going to be the last exchange we'll ever have with each other. And obviously mm-hmm. what we say leaves an imprint on our souls. Here this guy came through to apologize to his daughter.
Yeah, yeah. Irene.
Yes, sir.
What is the name of the book? Tell my audience the name of your book.
The name of the book is They Serve Bagels in Heaven.
Okay. Okay,
you
yeah.
You cannot
yeah.
forget that title. And
yeah,
for
you
those
can,
people
you sure
who
can.
Don't want to read, for those people who don't want to read, like I said, they'll pay it, they'll find out all about that on page 8. For those people who don't want to read, it's now on Audible as an audiobook also.
Oh,
and
great.
Not only
where,
that,
where can we find it?
It's on audible.com as an audiobook, which is a division of Amazon. And they
okay.
can go right on Amazon to get the book.
Wow, that's great. They serve bagels in heaven.
They
that's
serve
beautiful.
Bagels
that's
in heaven. I'm telling you, and it's a funny, and when you, and I promise you also that it's not like an esoteric, you know, uptight kind of a read. You're going to laugh. You're going to cry. It's got, it's
funny.
Got, it's a love story through time. There's some, even some juicy scenes in it and very funny things in it, but yeah. it really but, has, it's really fun. It's a fun read, but it's got a lot of wisdom to it.
I wanted to say the title is very, very catchy. It's a kind of title that would catch a reader's eye. It'll make you want to, you know, stop and say, hey, let's check this out. They say bagels in heaven. Yeah, it's a very catchy title. And I applaud you for that, you know.
Thank you. Thank you. And can I brag a little bit and just say it's gotten 2 professional 5-star reviews and there are over 50 positive reviews on Amazon for it?
Brag all you want.
So I'm very proud of that. You know, I wrote this because I was getting all these messages that I can help so many people. And I was blown away by that.
Well, yeah. Author Irene Weinberg on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Is there anything you want to say that you haven't said already? We're just about out of time.
I would really love to hear what I would really love is people can get on my website, which is www.theyservebagelsinheaven.com mm-hmm. and they can mm-hmm. see me making appearances in my presentations, and they can also contact me, because if when you listen to the audiobook or listen to the book, I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, I'm going to check out your book myself, because, I mean, you've just been great, so great on the show. You've been animated. You've been great. You've been wonderful. And I want to say this, ending this. Would you like a link of the show? Maybe you can put it on your website. You can put this show on your website where you are on this show, and people can come by your website or your blog and listen to you while you're on the show. I can
I
share that link
it.
With you.
I would adore it.
Yeah.
In fact, if you could, I think Stephanie Barnhart contacted you, George, and if you could even send that to her too, that would be great.
Stephanie Barnhart?
Barnhart? Mm-hmm.
She might have. Okay, Stephanie Barnhart. Okay, I'm gonna look her up. She should be in my email
right,
somewhere.
But I'll like Steph, would you like to email me the link? I can give you the email address.
Of course.
It's easy. It's okay. And we can communicate this way. It's Irene@theyservebagelsinheaven.com.
Wow, that's easy. All right.
And I want to hear from you, George, after you've read it.
Okay, you bet. You bet I will. I'm going to, you know, I'm going, if I like it, I'm pretty sure I will like it. I will, you know, let other people know about it and try to give you a little bit up on that. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being on the show and thanks for coming and thanks for being a great guest. I'll be in touch. Bye bye.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, Irene Winberg on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to take a little musical break right here, folks. We should be back in a second. Bye-bye.
Next on the to-do list, when we take over the DNC.
Oh, Michael. My God.
Ashley.
My name is Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd is here.
And I am a feminist. And I want to say hello to Independence Avenue in the back, all the way down to 17th Street.
Wow.
And I bring you words from Nina Donovan. A 19-year-old.
It was important for him to be briefed because the plan was to brief the president-elect as well, that these allegations had been circulating.
Pamela, hang on. We're going to go to Chicago, listen to the Attorney General Loretta Lynch talking about the civil rights investigation into the Chicago Police Department.
With me because they are the indispensable members of the team that led to this announcement today. Now, one of my highest priorities as Attorney General has been to ensure that every American enjoys police protection that is lawful, that is responsive and transparent. But as the events of recent years in Ferguson, in Baltimore, Cleveland, and many other cities have made clear, far too many Americans feel that they do not receive that kind of law enforcement. And far too many communities suffer because of painful divisions between police officers and citizens, divisions that make it significantly harder to reduce crime, to expand opportunity, and to ensure that every American, including our police officers, can be safe and secure in their neighborhoods. Now, in December of 2015, as part of that work, I announced that the Department of Justice, after careful review and extensive consultation with state and local officials and community leaders, was opening an investigation into whether the Chicago Police Department had engaged in a pattern or practice of violations of the Constitution or federal statutory law. And for the past 13 months, our investigators have worked tirelessly to obtain a full and an accurate and an impartial picture of policing in Chicago. They have conducted hundreds of interviews with citizens, with officials, with officers. They have reviewed thousands of pages of documents. They have observed Chicago Police Department officers on the job. And on the basis of this exhaustive review, the Department of Justice has concluded that there is reasonable cause to believe that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of use of excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. Our investigation found that this pattern or practice is in no small part the result of severely deficient training procedures and accountability systems. Now, as my colleagues will explain in greater detail, CPD does not give its officers the training they need to do their jobs safely, effectively, and lawfully. It fails to properly collect and analyze data, including data on misconduct complaints and training deficiencies, and it does not adequately review use of force incidents to determine whether force was appropriate or lawful, or whether the use of force could have been avoided altogether. All of these issues are compounded by poor supervision and oversight, leading to low officer morale and an erosion in officer accountability. These are serious problems, and they bear serious consequences for all Chicagoans. As I said when I announced this investigation, the systems and policies that fail ordinary citizens also fail the vast majority of Chicago Police Department officers who risk their lives every day to serve and protect the people of Chicago. And during the course of our investigation, the department heard from countless officers who were themselves disillusioned and discouraged by strained trust, by inadequate training, poor oversight, and inattention to officer wellness and safety. And those officers are proud to wear the badge, but they recognize that they lack the support both from the community and from the city to properly do their jobs. And they understand that repairing trust with the communities that they serve will require difficult and meaningful reforms. Now, to Chicago's credit, the city has not been standing still since we announced our investigation at the end of 2015. Under the leadership of Mayor Emanuel and Superintendent Johnson, Chicago Police Department has taken a number of encouraging steps to improve oversight and to encourage community-oriented policing. But our report makes clear that there is still considerable work to be done, work that will require federal partnership and independent oversight. And that is why I am pleased to announce today that the Department of Justice and the City of Chicago have agreed to begin negotiations on an independently monitored, court-enforceable consent decree. And in the days ahead, we will continue speaking to local residents, local authorities, to officers, to ordinary citizens, to gather their perspectives about the challenges facing this city and the changes needed to address them. Now, of course, this announcement comes at a critical juncture for this proud city. Chicago is grappling with a deeply troubling rise in violent crime, one that has already claimed far too many lives. Now, fighting violent crime has long been a priority for the Justice Department as well. And we at the Justice Department have brought our full resources to bear on this issue, from the FBI, ATF, U.S. Marshals Service, and the DEA, who have participated in joint task forces to combat violence, to the Department's Violence Reduction Network. Now, our efforts to work closely with local authorities to fight violence in a number of ways began long before we opened this investigation, and they will continue during and after this investigation. And no one understands that better than Zach Farden. Under his outstanding leadership, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Illinois has worked literally around the clock to tackle gun violence, gang cases, and other serious crimes afflicting this great city. And at the same time that Zach's office actively partnered with our Civil Rights Division on this pattern and practice investigation, the prosecutors in his office in 2016 charged the highest number of illegal firearm cases in any year since 2004. So the U.S. Attorney's Office here and federal investigative agencies have truly ramped up their efforts to help stem the recent rise in violence. But as I have seen firsthand from my community policing tour, that work is undermined if the community does not trust law enforcement. And that's why, in addition to increasing intelligence efforts and enhancing crime-fighting operations, we're also working with the city on a range of other critical initiatives, from youth outreach to counseling for the victims of crime. And these efforts will continue, and they will only be strengthened by the reforms that we are announcing today. Because successfully reducing and preventing violent crime requires a collaborative and trusting relationship between officers and residents. And where that relationship is broken, as it is in far too many of Chicago's neighborhoods, it's much harder to solve crimes and reduce violence. By making the changes necessary to bring constitutional, community-oriented policing to Chicago, the city and the police department will place itself in a much stronger position to combat the scourge of violence. And finally, I want to commend the people of Chicago for their patience and for their resilience throughout this long process. Community police relations is an especially difficult issue. It taps into long histories, deep beliefs, and strong opinions, and there's no lack of strong opinions here in Chicago. But it also forces us to honestly acknowledge the ways in which our society has fallen short in extending the protection of our laws to all Americans. It does not yield to swift or simple solutions. But meaningful change is never easy. The task of realizing the promise of our country has always been hard. And here in Chicago, thanks to the determination and the commitment of countless public officials, police officers, advocates, and citizens, we've taken the first step towards meaningful change and a brighter future. The people of this city have recognized that there is work to be done, and they've committed themselves to seeing that work through to the end. And the Department of Justice will stand beside you along the way. And I'm confident that when we are finished, when this review is finished and the changes are set in place, Chicago will be a stronger, a safer, and a more united city for everyone who calls it home. And at this time, I'll turn things over to Vinita Gupta, the head of the Civil Rights Division, who will say more about our findings. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you, Attorney General Lynch, and thank you also to U.S. Attorney Zach Farden. I am deeply grateful for the extraordinary work of the DOJ team, of the Civil Rights Division, and the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Chicago that has worked tirelessly over the past 13 months. I also want to thank Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Superintendent Eddie Johnson for their cooperation during this investigation and for their commitment to reform. And I want to thank the people of Chicago, including the city's police officers, for engaging with the Justice Department over the last many months because you care about your city so much. Since we launched this investigation in December of 2015, the Justice Department has deployed our largest team ever in a policing pattern or practice case to conduct a thorough and fair investigation of the Chicago Police Department and Independent Police Review Authority. We reviewed thousands of documents and hundreds of force reports. We met with community members, city officials, and each of the police unions. We visited each of Chicago's 22 police districts, went on 60 ride-alongs, spoke to 340 members of the CPD, from command staff to line officers. We also met with over 90 community organizations and heard from more than 1,000 Chicagoans. And 11 independent subject matter experts, most of them current or former law enforcement officials, assisted with this investigation. As the Attorney General said, we found that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of using excessive force, including deadly force and non-deadly force. This pattern includes, for example, shooting at people who present no immediate threat and tasing people for not following verbal commands. This conduct doesn't only harm residents, it endangers officers. It results in avoidable deaths and injuries and trauma. And it erodes police community trust, trust that truly is the cornerstone of public safety. We found that this pattern of unconstitutional force is largely attributable to systemic deficiencies within the CPD and city. We found that CPD does not adequately train its officers to use the appropriate amount of force. For example, we observed training on deadly force that used a video made decades ago with guidance inconsistent with both current law and internal policy. We found that CPD officers do not fully report their uses of force and that supervisors are not appropriately reviewing these uses of force. We found that Chicago's accountability systems are broken. Many complaints that should be investigated are not. And when investigations do occur, they are glacially slow and staffed by overworked and undertrained investigators who often fail to obtain basic witness statements and evidence. Officers are too rarely held accountable for misconduct, and when they are, discipline is unpredictable and ineffective. We found that CPD's approach to data collection on the use of force prevents CPD from spotting dangerous trends, responding with remedial training, and sharing information that would be useful to the public. We found that CPD's promotion systems are not transparent. And we found that CPD is failing to provide officers with the support that they need to deal with the stress and trauma of their jobs. We make these findings acutely aware that this is a time of significant challenge for Chicago residents and police officers. Gun violence has spiked, relations between police officers and residents is strained, and officer morale is suffering. But really, this context only heightens the importance and urgency of our findings. The failures that we identified and that we heard about from residents and officers alike have deeply eroded community trust, particularly in African American and Latino communities suffering the most from gun violence on Chicago's South and West Sides. These neighborhoods are the hardest hit by CPD's pattern of unlawful force and breakdown in the city's accountability systems. These breakdowns breed distrust and undermine police legitimacy in the very communities that need fair, proactive policing the most. Distrust of law enforcement makes residents unwilling to share information, and that makes it harder for officers to solve and prevent crimes. Addressing the deeply rooted police community distrust is a critical part of fighting crime and reducing violence in Chicago. Chicago's leaders, including especially the mayor and superintendent, of course, are aware of many of these problems, and to their credit, have been working to address them, such as revamping IPRA, bringing officers new de-escalation training, rolling out body cameras, and adopting a new policy on the release of videos, just among some.
You've been watching a news conference from Chicago where the U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch announced the results of a 13-month investigation into the Chicago Police Department, and they found that the Chicago Police Department had a pattern of excessive force, exhibited a pattern of excessive force, and importantly, the Chicago Police Department has agreed, the City of Chicago, to enter a consent decree with the Justice Department to work on policing in that city going forward. It was also noted right there that the minority community in Chicago has been disproportionately hit by this use of excessive force. This all stemmed from the release of a video more than a year ago of Laquan McDonald being shot and killed by a police officer. I want to bring in Paul Callen, CNN legal analyst. And Paul, this was an interesting news conference right there. This was a 13-month civil rights investigation. They did find a pattern of excessive force. They did announce a consent decree. Explain to me what this all means.
The Justice Department has conducted a number of these evaluations of cities across the United States. They did it in Newark, New Jersey, for instance, where there were repeated complaints of excessive force by police departments. And what they do is they come in and they give recommendations as to how to improve policing, and maybe there'll be increased funding that will be found for the Chicago police, hopefully, as a result of this. But I have to say, John, I find it to be very, very unusual to hear this in Chicago at this time, because Chicago has one of the most brutal homicide rates in America, over 750 killings, I think, this year so far. Last year, I think there were 3,500 shootings in the mostly minority neighborhoods of Chicago. So a lot of people are saying that policing is not aggressive enough in Chicago. And I think that there will be many who will look at this report and say this is going to force the police to back off even more from aggressively policing the dangerous neighborhoods out of fear that they'll face federal sanctions of some kind if they're aggressive in policing.
Let me just tell you what was said about this, because Loretta Lynch addressed that. First of all, she said the excessive force stemmed from deficient training and poor supervision, and she did note the rising number of homicides in Chicago, the plague of homicides in that city over the last year or two that has been on the rise, though not to record levels, but has certainly been on the rise in a very alarming way. She says the pattern of excessive force has eroded trust in minority communities and has prevented people from coming forward with information that may help in investigations, may prevent more murders. So what they seem to be trying to do, Paul, was say that maybe all these things are tied up into one little package.
Yes, and I think all of those points are quite legitimate. Having been a homicide prosecutor myself, I know that cooperation from the community in making cases against the bad guys is critical. And if you don't have the trust of the police and law enforcement officials, you cannot solve crime problems. But of course, on the other hand, you need a cooperative police force that's willing to go out and put their lives on the line to fight the bad guys. So it's a really delicate balance, not to scare the police out of aggressive policing, but on the other hand, to make sure that they honor and respect the legitimate law-abiding citizens in these neighborhoods. And hopefully, the Department of Justice will find a way to achieve these two competing goals.
It is a difficult challenge, to say the least. Paul Callen, thanks so much for being with us.
Okay. Thank you, John.
All right.
All righty, we are back on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Sorry for the dead air. It must have that clip. Thanks for that clip. We are back on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's do this right quick and just so we can make sure we're all on the same page.
My son has been arrested for walking while black. So I get it.
A lot of sons have been arrested.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame, you know, in the case of Garner. Well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was bad. It's like, no, stop. Stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
All right, I want to thank my guest, Irene Weinberg, for being on the show. She was so animated and excited talking about her book, They Serve Bagels in Heaven. I'm really going to check that out, folks. She sounds like a nice person, and you know, and she believes what she believes, and you know, maybe we should too. She's not going to tie anybody down to try to believe what she believes, and that's good. That's good. But the book sounds very exciting. You know what she reminds me of? She reminds me of Irma Bombeck from back in the day, who was also a satirist. And she was funny, and she was humorous, and she was just satirical. And, you know, this is what Miss Weinberg reminds me of, is Irma Bombeck. Okay, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. At the beginning of the show, we were talking about Chicago crime. And it is escalating as I sit here and speak to you today, folks, tonight, actually. And as I was saying, they are going to turn down the city of Chicago, the mayor, the superintendent. They're going to turn, if the feds offer up help and that help ends up being the National Guard, they're going to turn it down and say that they don't want that. And they're turning it down before anyone even specified what kind of federal help will be coming, if it's coming at all. My point here is that I've always stated that this National Guard should be at the forefront of this. This is the murder. Chicago is the murder capital of the United States. I mean, we're like Iraq, Baghdad, Afghanistan, you name it, with the shootings and the killings, the muggings, the crime, the robberies all over the place. The police can't handle it or won't handle it. And for Chicago to turn down help, I mean, we got all kind of talking heads talking about this as I'm speaking right now, talking about Chicago's crime, talking about, you know, this or that, and talking about sitting down with Trump and discussing ways of solving Chicago crime. If I was Trump, and I'm not, but if I was Trump, I wouldn't talk to any of them because they're all failures. They're all failures in my book. I wouldn't even work with Emmanuel. I wouldn't work with the superintendent. I would get the federal government out here in Chicago and let them handle it because they have failed so far miserably. Why would you want to partner with people who have failed you, who have failed their city? Get the federal government out here, whether it's in the term of the National Guard, the U.S. Army, or other federal personnel, maybe agents out here patrolling these streets 24/7. The only thing you're going to need Chicago for, the Chicago Police Department, is information, intel, intelligence. You know, that they can help in that form. But I think if there's going to be a federal investigation, the feds are coming to Chicago to help alleviate the crime problem. I think the Chicago Police Department should sit back on this. They have failed. their policies, what they're doing, have failed. Let somebody come in who knows how to do something, hopefully, who knows what's going on, who knows how to stop and lower the carnage, the killings, the murders in the city of Chicago, because the police can't do it. The mayor is too weak-kneed to do it. Turning down help, turning down the National Guard, give me a break, people. I mean, it's like watching a movie, or in other words, it's like criticizing a movie before you've seen it. And this is what the mayor and the superintendent are doing. They're criticizing the federal government on, in case they send in National Guard. They never have done this before. I mean, you don't know how this is going to go down. You can't criticize something if it has never started yet, if it's never began. You know, don't criticize the National Guard if you don't know what the outcome may be. Give them a chance. Let them try. Let's see what we can do over here on the south and west sides of Chicago. Let's see what we can do on bringing down the carnage, the shootings, the murders, the sex trafficking. Let's see what we can do. Because the city government is not doing it. So let the federal government do it. See what's, give them a shot. Let them try. If they fail, then hey, wow, you have a point. If they do not fail, the crime statistics will go down. Maybe even be eliminated. Stop saying that, you know, they don't, I actually believe that they don't want any help. I actually believe they don't want the federal government in Chicago, period. What they want is money. They're talking about resources in terms of education, in terms of jobs, in terms of, I've just got through saying, that's great, that's fine, that's wonderful if it comes, but we have criminals out here on the street. We have murderers, we have shooters out here on the street. They don't give one damn about an education. They don't give one damn about a job. They care about shooting people, gunning down people, robbing, sticking up, murdering. This is what they care about. They wouldn't take a job if you gave it to them. They wouldn't pick up a book if you had put, if you put a gun to their heads. These guys are all about breaking the fucking law. So why turn down federal help in any form, no matter what it is? If it's help and it can make a positive impact on your city, on your neighborhoods, why not accept it? Why make up excuses to not accept help? It's free. It's not coming out of your pocket. Taxpayers are paying for it. What's wrong with you people? You are supposed to be leaders of the city. And as being leaders, one of your jobs is to protect the people of the city and of the state. People are dying all over the place. 42 homicides in 2017 alone. 42 people died in the month of January, but all by itself, surpassing the amount that was killed in January of 2016. Folks, it's already out of control. And yet these assholes turning down federal help. Help that they're not even know if they're going to actually get. Oh, this is crazy. I know they're going to hear this show. I know people are listening to the show, and I know somebody's going to say, hey, listen to the George Wilder Jr. show. Maybe you might come to your senses, but I doubt it. I doubt it. You know what they're going to say? If they hear this show, if they're listening, they're going to say, I'm crazy. National Guard, oh, you're crazy. Crazy because I want the carnage, the killings, the murders, the homicides in the city to stop? Am I crazy because I want those things to stop, to cease? And it doesn't seem the police can do it. Well, then I'm crazy. Okay, I will gladly take the adjective. I'm crazy. Okay, I want to see Chicago be the great city that it is. I'm embarrassed that it's a national joke when it comes to crime, solving crime. It's embarrassing. And for Chicago to want to turn down federal help if it's the National Guard, it's just crazy. It's ludicrous. Give the National Guard, give them a try. I mean, if nothing else goes, give them a try. If nothing else can do it, give the National Guard a try. What's wrong with that? If they fail, kick them out. But I doubt if they fail. This is America. Give me a break. America has fought many wars, and now we have a war in the city of Chicago on the south and west sides of the city with these thugs. It's just beyond me, folks. It is beyond me. Okay, once again, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm still ranting, as you can probably hear. And I'm really adamant. I'm really passionate about this. I just don't understand how people can turn down needed help, turn down help that is readily available. But you cannot throw money at this. They're talking about, well, we need needed resources in the neighborhood. What you need, the National Guard or the Army to go in there and wipe out those thugs. Those criminals, that's what you need. I mean, you can put as many cops on the street as you want. The more cops you put on the streets in some of these neighborhoods, you're going to have more dead cops or more cops that are injured or shot. You know, these gangbangers, these criminals, I mean, they are sophisticated. They're smart. They're intelligent. They know what's going down. They know how to avoid the police officers. They know how to avoid going to jail. They are sophisticated. They're smart. They are up on all of the technology better than the police department. You need to go in here and clean out these neighborhoods, clean out these communities. That's the only thing that's going to happen, and the police is not doing it. You need the National Guard. You need federal agents. You need something on the ground, boots on the ground in the city of Chicago, in these neighborhoods. Go where these guys, if you see bad guys, you know, standing on the corner, they look like they're bad guys. They're dressed like bad guys. They must be bad guys. You don't drive by them. You don't pass them up because you feel like you may violate their rights. They have no damn rights. If they're out there shooting people, killing people, robbing and thugging and, you know, knocking people in the back of the head, they have no rights. Okay, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Everybody, thanks so much for listening. We got about 8 more minutes left into the show. It's been fun. I want to thank my guest once again, Irene Winberg, for being a great guest on the show. We always have commentary on this show. We talk about anything and everything on this show. It's always a pleasure to do the show. I love doing the show, even if I'm passionate at some time. Once we're off the air today, we are not going to be back on until Monday because we're going to be off Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we usually get 3 or 4 days off, you know, but we are on Monday through Thursday, just about every day of the week, starting at 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., if not longer sometimes. So that's my schedule. That's the George Wilder Jr. Show schedule. And I'm going to say before I go off that, I mean, have a great weekend, folks. We're going to do this right quick. We're going to do a musical break if we can find it. But like I said, folks, we got to do something about the carnage in the city of Chicago. I mean, I think what's going on in Chicago is not just a Chicago problem. It's an American problem because Chicago is a part of the United States, so that makes it America problem. But, you know, we got some people in office, you know, they think they don't want any help at all. You know, it's just crazy. It's just crazy. All right, here we go, folks.
Bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl.
I want to thank everybody from wait a minute. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to thank those people who are loyal to the show. That is just too gratifying. And I want to say here that I want to say one more thing about Trump. He is now, as everybody knows, this guy, he's going to erect a wall, build a wall. He was telling everybody a few months ago that Mexico was going to pay for the wall, but it seems like if there is a wall to be erected, it's going to be footed by the taxpayer. And there are going to be a lot of cuts in programs and eliminations of outright agencies because they have to offset the payment. They have to offset the payment for this wall, if I can say it. So, you know, it's going to be in other words, it's going to be taxpayers who pay for it, you and I. And that's really, really bad, folks. Okay, I want to say thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, everybody. And join me Monday. I will be back here Monday. This is Thursday. So I will be back here on Monday. And we will have another great show for you people, for everybody out there. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a good one. Join me on Monday. All right.